So it was in the early morning hours of that date, the 3rd of February 1965, around 2 o'clock in the morning, when I was in my homeland, in Switzerland, near Hinel, when I was asked by Arskit's voice to proceed to a certain location, where then I would be sent for. Many questions occupied me as I proceeded, and suddenly I found myself at the place designated, before I was conscious of my progress. All had gone very quickly, as almost before I arrived, a bright light shot down from the sky and touched down near me. Following a gentle urge, I went towards it, and suddenly was carried through an opening, like with a pear-like ship of Svath. Then the opening closed itself and very astonishing events began to take place. All of this dialogue was written down with the help of Arskit. She was able, with the help of some apparatus, to repeat long-ago conversations word for word quite accurately. Thus in recording these reports I am able to repeat correctly every word and sentence spoken. The marvelous equipment used by Arskit is able to not only recover every word, but also thought impulses behind those words as well. Chapter 3. Aboard the Dull spacecraft. It was mere 5/18 close-up observation of extraterrestrial spacecraft when at 2 o'clock in the early morning hours of the 3rd of February 1965, he was summoned to a place which had only shortly before that been made known to him telepathically. It was severely cold when he left his residence and started that walk in the dark to a favorite place of his where he had often gone alone for many hours. Just 16 days before that he had been told that this would be the place for the contact on the day, a time then still to be fixed, and it was now confirmed as the contact point. Though clattering cold, he began to sweat as he climbed briskly up a little hill to the agreed upon site. He had barely arrived when he saw, shooting down from the sky, a brilliantly luminous flying object which immediately landed near him on the hard frozen ground. The bright light went out and he could see a matte silvery disc-shaped object which stood majestically on its three landing spheres and seemed to wait for him. Following a brief telepathic instruction, and a gentle urging, he went toward the ship, and was immediately lifted into it through an opening, by some force, as there was no elevator nor any other means of entrance, something like he had experienced with the old man in the pear-shaped ship when he was a small boy. But the inside equipment was basically different from the ship of Svath. There was only one seat in it, and there was nobody else. He was alone. He thought this ship must be remotely controlled, so he sat down into the single but very comfortable seat. As he was getting settled, a powerful change took place. The bright light coming from everywhere inside the ship suddenly went out, and then he felt like he was sitting in free space. He could see nothing of the ship and its equipment, and when he raised his hand before his eyes he couldn't see it either. Then it started to move upwards in the night sky. It slowly floated at low level toward the nearby village, where it hovered barely 2 meters above the house his parents were living in, and just remained hanging in the air, as Arskit V's voice sounded in his head again and gave him some information about his further life and that of his family sleeping there below him, and that of his own family in years to come. He had just married a Greek girl that same year. Then the still invisible ship began to move eastwards, and increasing its speed, shot up into the night sky without Mia feeling any discomfort. Mia later said, "There was no doubt that I was in space, very high above the Earth, which I saw only as a blue-white-greenish sphere, but not actually a sphere, only part of a sphere, because now it looked like the moon when it is half full. I saw the dim contours on the surface as they faded into the darkened part." This was in 1965, before our own first Earth deep space mission. Then his vision was blurred, momentarily, and just as suddenly became visible again, and he could again see everything in the bright light of the inside of the ship. Then the entrance door opened and he looked out, and was surprised to see that completely unnoticed by him the small ship had landed. He got up to step out, and found that he softly floated down to the ground and landed on hard, dry soil. It was much warmer, and in the weak night light he thought the ground landscape looked to be of a reddish color, and the soil was more sandy, while in the surroundings nearby masses of sandy rocks rose in elevation. The landscape looked familiar as he leaned on one of the big rocks, It was warm. When he touched the rock material, he suddenly knew he was in Jordan. As he puzzled about that, a light fell from the sky like a stone. Bright and large as the moon, he saw it falling, growing bigger. Then suddenly it stopped and simply hovered quietly about 100 meters above the ground, without even slowing before the dead stop. The luminous object hung in the air for a moment, then slowly settled to the ground and gently landed. The shiny metallic silence object illuminated the surroundings like day. He watched and waited for something to happen. Time passed and nothing changed. So he sat down on a rock and waited, for nearly a half hour, until at last something moved. Then a figure appeared from behind the ship and came up to within a few yards of him, as slowly the luminous radiance of the ship dimmed down and then went out. But in a very short moment it lighted up again, and its light began to spread like a dawn. In the weak illumination of that dawn light he could make out the figure of a person, a female, Asket, he knew. She walked confidently up to him and greeted him in a way that was familiar and known to him, but he could not figure out why. She seemed strangely familiar. When he asked about this, she only smiled and suggested he consider other lifetimes before this. Her dress seemed familiar also, though it was much different from that of Sfath. She wore a foot-length pleated gown of a peculiar silver-white color, girdled at the waist. Her long blonde hair fell to her shoulders. She invited Mia to join her in her ship, which he did, and that ship sped up into the sky and, like the remote-controlled shuttlecraft, also seemed to become invisible. The shuttlecraft was left in the labyrinth of rocks below, invisible to human eyes. Mia saw the early light of dawn on an ocean, and he thought it must be the Mediterranean, which proved to be correct. The ship sank down to the ground where he could see the big pointed structures he knew to be the pyramids of Egypt. The dive velocity suddenly stopped without Mia feeling anything, and then the sinking became a gentle floating down to the desert sand. They touched down a few meters to one side of the Sphinx near a small Bedouin camp where Arab-dressed people were beginning to break camp. They didn't seem to notice the landing of the ship, which puzzled Mia, as he did not see how they could be missed. As the ship stopped, Asket fastened a small device to Mia's belt so they would remain invisible after they left the field of the ship. They could see each other and the ship, and they could see the other people perfectly, but they and the ship remained invisible to others. After showing Mia something of interest there, they returned and re-entered the ship and it shot rapidly up into the sky as before. The ship rushed back and landed at the same waste mountains of Jordan, where they had left the small remote-controlled shuttle, where Asket took time and explained many things, about his life and his education, and his finally taking over his mission. In Mia's more recent incarnation history he has been an Arab, though up to then he had not discovered this. When he does, these scenes will be recalled and then he will know the reason for his strange familiarity with the country. Among the many things discussed there aboard Asket's ship parked in the Jordanian mountains was a resume of some of the information imparted to Mia up to now and a concise putting together of this and more background information to reveal all of this in better perspective to help Mia to understand the mission that was about to begin. In her own words, this is what she told Mia at that time, reminding him of a transmission in 1956, Asket. The creation is the basic foundation of life and all existence. In the force of the creation, we fulfill our mission, which is not only of cosmic, but all universal importance, because the creation is the life, and the creation is the existence. To fulfill our missions we must neutralize the structure of our space, time, and of yours in the respective universes, to achieve harmonic transfer without damage to ships and universes. Our homeworld is in the dull universe, in the system of, inner for you earthlings, strange system of just as strange a universe, of which there are several around your own familiar universe. But of these, other universes lie in other planes of time and within completely unfamiliar to you space/dimensions. Our universe is a parallel to yours, and it lies, reckoned from your time, in an equal plane. The difference between our and your time is only a very little. The cause of our coming into your cosmos originated in earlier time. In the urge to exploration of our race. Enabled by technical developments, one universe's barrier was penetrated, from ours to yours, which admitted entrance for us into your time. Since then we explore the widths of your universe, and some centuries ago we discovered this sun system, and by that, your world. In our explorations, besides finding this world, we also found the ancient homeworld of those then responsible for the human life on this world, because the human being of this earth did not originate here. Me is a descendant of those who originally came from that location which you call the Ring Nebula, in the constellation Lyra. There is the real ancient home of the Earth human race. The descendants of those earthly ancestors are no longer populating the regions of space and systems around the Ring Nebula today, but live on world bodies of those sun systems which you call the Seven Sisters or the Pleiades. They are the far descendants of your actual ancestral forefathers. But about all these matters shall you, counting from today, within some 20 Earth years, become initiated by the descendants of your ancestors themselves, when you are mature enough to stand the new explanations and recognitions. Until then you are obliged to learn much, and develop your wisdom to fulfill your heavy mission. You are provided as already many others in earlier times before you. In this respect you were already before your birth placed under the control of a certain one who had to protect and guide and teach you. Such a life is difficult, because the concerned one has very much to learn. It is an obligation to all higher developed creatures, to assist less developed forms in a helpful manner of responsible measure, to influence the evolution in given measure. This duty is an obligation of all creatures of all universes, because it is a creational law. As we are here, from a strange to you universe, to us also is here obliged the duty, in suited time, to make official contact with any developing forms of life. We have recognized, in this, your universe, many things which are in need of change. Especially on this world, things are moving on a very dangerous course. The mankind of Earth has come into an age of knowledge and development disturbed by many factors which enslave and exploit him. The thirst for power has always, and always will lead to wars and bloodshed, by which innumerable lives are lost. All of your developments and inventions are turned into death-bringing and senseless weapons. You have forced the cornerstones of life into dangerous means of mass destruction. And already, within a short time the Earth human will hurry out of his atmosphere in manned missiles. Soon will also be the time when he will walk on the Earth satellite, your moon, and speak great deceiving words of peace and love. They are only words of infatuation, because the minds of those Earth humans strive only for invincible might and world power. Their words are only intrigues to deceive the real peaceful forms of life and force them into bondage. Your religions and politics of Earth cooperate in these concerns together, and do not shrink from any deception to accomplish their power-hungry goals. Earthman has advanced his evolution, but only in technical and material sciences. His spiritual evolution has been suppressed by worldly materiality. The Earth human has become able to destroy his world in an atomic explosion, which would bring very dangerous consequences for the whole system. Already, one time, a similar catastrophe occurred in this sun system, when a second populated by mankind planet, of this system, was destroyed. By the unreasonability of the then living there mankind, the planet was exploded into thousands of greater and smaller pieces, and destroyed. As a sister planet of Earth, she circled round the Sun in that place, where now the planet Mars orbits, and the pieces now circle is the asteroid belt. The name of that planet was Milan, which has changed little in translation. In German it is known as Milona and in English as Maltk. To prevent further madness like this, is exactly the duty of the more advanced races. An atomic destruction of this Earth could destroy your whole sun system and push the planets out into the cosmos as extremely dangerous missiles. These could again destroy further sun systems and produce cosmic catastrophe. Even neighboring universes could be affected. Besides this, the sun system moves in space in such a way that the catastrophe could spread to other systems in a form of chain reaction in your cosmos. A similar event is already known. This world was destroyed by the ancestors of your human race, which brought religion to your people. A loss of Earth could distort the structure of space and time and produce great damage. So it is our objective to prevent this eventuality, and together with many other creatures of other worlds of this universe to control the Earth and attempt to contain the already conjured mischief by Earth scientists, and head this off. That is our mission. We are forced to interfere in the machinations of religions and politics for power, and to force leading personalities to reduce their intrigues. The list of leading personalities who will be murdered is long, but we are not able to change that. The guilt is of the Earth being itself, and it alone. We do not want any death and any murder, but we do want peace in this and all other universes. This may demand that we coerce the leading forces of Earth to peace, as they generate against themselves deadly enemies, for which reason many good men will die, and which we unfortunately cannot prevent. If our mission should fail, this could be a great catastrophe. But we have good expectations and have prepared you since birth for participation. It will be your mission to initiate the Earth mankind into this truth, to bring the way of real peace and love. The time will hurry, because in the point of time when you will come to attention, already other dangerous things will be on the move, which rise from the struggles for power. Be conscious that when I give you permission to speak out after important events, you will then be in danger for your life, because you will reveal secret things. The initiators of these intrigues will try to deprive you of your life and seek to kill you, because you reveal their secrets. So take care and do always exercise the greatest caution. Do keep all these circumstances to yourself, and never try to circumvent this order. So listen carefully now to my words, and remember the important facts, thus you can observe the events and by this verify the truths of my prophecies. The unavoidable events of the future will come to pass with absolute certainty, just like the events of the past, to which I want to explain, that the events of the future have already been set in motion in the past by the murder of Joseph Stalin by poison on the 5th of March 1953, in Russia, by order of internal elements. The reason for the murder by poisoning was the kind attention of Stalin to the Zionists, which in the following two decades will change into enmity against Zionism. For these reasons, the next following great man in Russia, Nikita Khrushchev, will be forced to be dismissed in 1964, to give the last form to the justified enmity against Zionism. In the time of Khrushchev will be elected a new president in America, but to be murdered in 1963 by secret order of the American Security Service, the CIA. A second political murder will follow the first, only 5 years later, when by the same order givers, a new president candidate will be killed the same way. Also, the Holy Office in Rome will be afflicted by the worldwide religious and political intrigues. As with Stalin, the same very fast vanishing from the body poison will be used to murder, in the year 1962, Pope John XXIII, who will then have occupied his office only a very short time. Still his successor, Pope Paul VI, will be switched off in the same manner, by Cardinalian machinations in cooperation with Zionist extremists, who have already smithed their murderous schemes. Also in Greece, the state's first man, King Paul I, will die the same poison death in 1964, like those already mentioned. His successor, Konstantinos, will 3 years later be exiled as an exploiter of the nation, by a revolutionary military regime. Also Egypt will not be spared, for in the middle of the 70s a dictatorial statesman by the name of Abdel Gamal Nasser will be deprived of his life by poison in the same manner as before him. His friend, too, the Emir of Kuwait, will die in 1965 by poison, by the hand of his own relatives. Also at the hand of his own relative will in 1975, die the King of Saudi Arabia, King Faisal, who will be shot to death. These are coming events of the next 20 years. Keep them very carefully, and do not speak of them until permission is given. In these prophecies you will recognize many religions playing into one another, and the coming events not only of political character, but of religious political nature. Consider, In these matters, we have not come to interfere in the religions and political concerns of Earth, or to lead the Earth human beings. These matters oblige to you in later times, and to your followers, who will then be able to spread the truth. We also have not come to have close contacts with Earthmen, or to advance her in evolution by great amount. We are only here to fulfill our mission of preventing the catastrophe. For further matters, such as helping evolution, etc., other forms of life in your own universe are responsible. These have already been controlling the Earth for thousands of years, and also keeping limits those space-traveling races who have evil intentions toward Earth humans. When you are ready to perform your mission, you will still have to learn very much more. You have to see the truth and acknowledge it, and this means for you great study in many things. You have to learn to find the truth by yourself, and to evaluate what you find, by which your future life will be very heavy and full of need. You often will desire not to live, and to rest in the kingdom of death. But do consider at such times, that you have to perform your obligations as any other form of life, and are not allowed to shirk your mission. But to help you, you shall be granted certain things. Our technologies permit many things for us, and by this as well, journeys into the past and into the future. So these possibilities may be used to show you matters of great meaning, so you can see the truth in them for yourself, which will be important to you. It is decided to take you into the past, to offer you there an opportunity to examine the facts. These are the matters which I came to explain to you today. That was in effect a recapitulation of a telepathic transmission received in the course of deep meditation by Mir, from Asket, on the 3rd of February 1956. He lost that set of notes in his travels, and it was retransmitted to him in the form of automatic writing at Mehrauli, India on the 1st of September 1964. He is now being reminded of those transmissions, and at the same time getting this confirmation that those telepathic receptions were more real than his imagination. Time has passed and some of these prophesied events had already taken place. Looking back over that statement, it is possible for us to form some observations. 1. Loss of a planet might possibly upset the equilibrium of our solar system and allow it to break up, like a wheel out of balance at high revolution. Their concern is heightened by what they say is an example already witnessed in our universe. 2. The mission laid on Edouard Mir is a small mission within the greater self-appointed mission of protection of our neighboring worlds and systems from the catastrophe of our folly. There are several reasons for this at this time, and also for Mir being selected to perform the mission. There is good reason for the Pleiadian extraterrestrials being the ones to carry out this phase of activity now, because the Dulls have a limitation on time. They had to leave by the end of 1974, presumably due to other cosmic conditions that affect them. Some good reasons for these participants in this drama are: A. The ancestors of the Pleiadians, and consequently ours too, are the ones who perpetrated the other similar catastrophe mentioned, and thus they have a direct responsibility to stop, or prevent, this new possibility now. B. It was they who brought the madness that allowed this aberration here on Earth, as the power-hungry IHWHs, who set up their early religious feudalism in order to control and enslave the indigenous survivor remnants of their own earlier ancestry here. Semir is told that he was one of the IHWHs then, as were Sam Jays, Da, Quetzal and others here now. 3. Before they left this sector of space, the Dulls had arranged for the Pleiadians, having a direct responsibility in these problems, to take over where they left off. They had helped the Pleiadians to achieve ME technologies to better carry out their responsibilities. But they were still aboard Asket's ship parked there in the Jordanian mountains. The silent remote-controlled shuttlecraft stood dark and silent nearby. Being already very late, Mir was exhausted, and leaned back in the comfortable seat, which now turned into a couch, as Asket suggested he get some sleep. She relaxed into the other seat, also converted into a couch, which Mir barely noticed before he sank into a deep sleep. It was daylight when he awoke and saw that Asket had conjured from somewhere things to eat and drink. We sat comfortably at a desk-like formation which had been pulled out of the ship's wall, and enjoyed a solid meal. What I was eating and drinking I was not able to define, yet it was very tasty, though fully unknown to me. The drink was a bit yellow-white and somehow thick fluid, and would have been some juice of an unknown fruit. Also the meal seemed to have been prepared from fruits, as well as from some vegetables too. The taste was very strange to me, still everything seemed somehow familiar once more. But all was excellent and tasted marvelous to me. After the breakfast, Asket brought from somewhere, a great vessel of cool, clear water, which we took outside of the ship and put on the ground nearby. Like little children, we splashed with the delightful wetness and cleansed ourselves with it. They remained there until that evening, spending most of the time inside of the ship where Asket continued the discussions, and told me a very many new things. They were already not seeming so strange anymore, but Mia was astonished that he accustomed himself to all this in such a short time. He seemed to already have known Asket for thousands of years, she seemed so familiar. And for the ship and its details, it had become so familiar in that short time that he didn't wonder about it anymore. In response to a question about aiding Earth sciences on great technical problems, Asket replied that if any creature should achieve advanced knowledge too early in its development, it may not use such knowledge wisely, and unavoidable and irresistible catastrophes could result, such as the situation we now find ourselves in. Having discovered secrets of atomic science that we are not mature enough to control. She said such knowledge was betrayed when we turned it to destructive purposes in the form of the atomic bombs. She said that once in possession of this dangerous and destructive weapon, it is only a short step until its utilization in a repetition of earlier events which impregnated Earth's atmosphere with deadly clouds, which since then have injured all of nature, and produced catastrophic climatic changes all around the world. She said that the human beings of this Earth are at a stage of development where every increase in knowledge is dangerous because of present Earth man's insane and unbridled thirst for power, that this is degenerate and contrary to nature, that if Earth humanity is to be helped, it is only possible when he gives up his power-mad delusions. A complete change in thinking is of necessity before he can be allowed access to more advanced information. As long as he does not get rid of his egotism, and does not learn the truths, so long help cannot be given him from beyond Earth. Throughout the day of the 4th of February the discussions continued until night fell. Then Asket said goodbye, as they were standing outside her ship, and Mia turned and went into the small shuttlecraft still parked there, which had brought him here 2 days ago, and the start-up process began as before. He was quickly returned and set down in the same place from which he had departed, that memorable earlier night. He floated down out of the ship, and was barely a few steps away, when it slowly rose up into the air, and then, like a flash shot up into the dark sky and disappeared going straight. Up and out of sight. After that, Mia wrote, Asket's explanations and details took a long time, and also many other matters were mentioned and explained, about which I must still keep strictest silence. Even if I wanted to change this, I would not be able, because first, I have given a promise and second, all is now protected by a security block so that, even if I wanted to, I would not be able to speak. I do not know the kind of security block, as it is only known to me, that I am not able to speak, even by will, without permission. I only know that this security block was generated by Asket, using some kind of peculiar apparatus. I must confess that Asket's explanations at first seemed unreal, and I thought I might be dreaming. I always expected to wake up and get back into reality again, but the longer Asket's explanations lasted, the more I became convinced that everything was already reality and that I was not suffering from any dream. I pinched my earlobes severely, and burned a cigarette into my left hand and felt the pain. Several times I squeezed Asket's hand, and pressed it strongly, and I heard her cry out, and felt her opposite pressure. It re-edoth the things, but everything seemed to be true reality, and that I was not dreaming. 3 days passed, and on 7 February Mia was again directed to a new meeting with Asket. He says, "It had just become really dark, when I heard a soft whirring, as if near the rotor blade of a helicopter, near the end of its rotation. Then near me a dark object sank down and landed in the field. Uninvited I walked towards it, and suddenly saw a slim figure appear. It was Asket, who now called to me. We let ourselves be lifted together into the ship, and already we sat in the comfortable seats.